Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. We're here with Coca-Cola Hellenic. I'm Andrea Pistacchi from Deutsche Bank, beverage analyst, and it's my pleasure to introduce Zoran Bogdanovic, chief executive, and Michaeli Tsimelos, chief finance officer. So the format here will be a fireside chat. So I'll ask Zoran and Michaelis a few questions, and then we'll open it up to the floor if you have any questions. So I think a good way of starting it is by asking, Zoran has been chief executive for about 6 months. Of course, you've been at Coca-Cola Hellenic for much, much longer than that. I think around 20 years, probably a bit more than that. And you've taken over at a time when there's a lot of change happening at Coca-Cola and in the Coke system under Quincy's leadership. So against this backdrop, it will be interesting to hear what you think are the 2-3 strategic priorities for Hellenic now, right now.
Thank you, Andrea. And good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining. Indeed, as you said, it's very interesting time, exciting time in the Coca-Cola system. In that context, I was grateful to when I took over the organization 6 months ago to take over such a organization in excellent shape, in the growth mode trajectory, and with a strong talent pipeline. Now, top 2-3 strategic priorities I would highlight. Number one is development of a true 24/7 total beverage portfolio. When I say 24/7, I just want to reiterate that really means providing beverages for the needs for the consumer occasions across literally 24/7 from the morning all the way till the evening, because developing such a variety of categories that we serve to consumers and customers is something that we see as a critical differentiating point. Second thing is development of people and empowerment of people, so that this increasing complexity can be dealt with from a capable and empowered organization that can really act with speed in delivering and executing that big portfolio. And the last point is a very close, tight partnerships with customers to accelerate our revenue growth. And when I say with customers, that means really that as a total beverage company, we serve customers across all possible channels. And that's also one differentiating point that we believe makes a difference in our strategy. And I would just say also in the context of developing a total beverage company, and that ambition together with Coca-Cola Company, we and I'm personally excited with the direction also that Coca-Cola Company is taking and changes and steps that they are doing. That helps us a lot as one system.
So in the system, there's clearly more focus on value rather than just volume compared to the past. So talking about value and revenue growth, where do you see the on a 5-year view the most significant revenue growth opportunities mm-hmm. for Hellenic?
You made an excellent reminder that this aligned view on the value creation, so that it's not like volume or value, however, really aligned view on the value is something that brings much more clarity, speed, and view how to grab the opportunities that are out there. When it comes to the opportunities, we can split them in two areas. One is the categories, and second one is geography. In the categories, even though we already predominantly are in the sparkling beverages, approximately 70% of the portfolio, there are many opportunities still in this category, especially when we see development of the zero and light, no sugar variants, and also adult and mixers as a segment within sparkling that is growing very fast. So we see across the market the growth rates in both of these and how much that is helping us. Together with innovation that happens within sparkling, that's why we see also this year very pleasing growth of the sparkling category. Secondly, in a number of other categories this year, we have made a huge change in all markets simultaneously, switching to Fuze Tea, which is totally redefining the category, constant innovation in juices. We are, apart from the mainstream water, we are premiumizing water. Example with smart water that we have now rolled out to a number of our markets. And entrance to the new categories, plant-based beverages. We have entered in May in 13 markets with the plant-based beverages from soy, from almond, etc. So for customers, this was a big thing that we come with something like this, but that's another revenue pool that we see amazing growth ahead of us. Not to mention energy, which is growing every year double-digit, sports drinks. So that complemented also with our, as we call them, complementary categories of distribution of premium spirits and coffee. That really gives you the sense of opportunities that are in categories. And then in geographies, we are really lucky and privileged to have geography and countries that we have all the way, you know, from Russia, from Vladivostok to Dublin in Ireland, Lagos, Nigeria, Riga in Baltics. So 28 markets where, you know, from developing and emerging, opportunities are immense. Just talking about Russia and Nigeria, number one, per capita levels which exist there and bringing them just to the average of Hellenic or average of Europe would be immense and will be continuous growth. But I would like to highlight also in the geographies, very often in the calls, etc., people ask about Russia and Nigeria, which I fully understand. But there is a second tier of countries that have over the years developed so much and are bringing lots of growth. Ukraine, Hungary, Serbia, Romania, Poland, Czech, just to name few that are bringing lots of growth and we see lots of opportunities.
So putting this into numbers, you have a revenue growth target of 4-5%.
Yes.
This sounds a sustainable target, clearly also for the medium term with all these growth opportunities. When you think about this target in terms of building blocks, how should you think about it? The market growth, or whether you need to get to this level of growth, do you need to gain share in the market? And do you need innovation every year that is fueled to you by the Coke system, like Fuze Tea, of course, that you're rolling out this year, or Monster last mm-hmm. year?
Just as a reminder, that 4-5% growth bracket we have articulated mid-2016 when we had Investors Day at the London Stock Exchange. And that's an average rate from 16 to 2020, and it's kind of a neutral one. The starting assumption was that we saw at that time the estimate that non-alcohol ready-to-drink industry would grow in average 1.5% per year. Less of a growth in the first years, but then more of a growth like a hockey stick in the from 18 onwards. On top of that, we do have ambition and we believe we can gain market share further, as we have done in the past years, which brings around 40 basis points. So that brings you already around 2% or just above that. And then on top of that, you add price mix, as for us, it's a balanced game between volume and price mix. That's how we want to drive the revenue growth. And price mix, we believe, starting point is that we can be around the inflation that is in the market. We also see that in a number of our territories, there is back the healthy inflation levels, which are helping. And on top of that, we have lots of opportunities when it comes to mix. Constantly, we are developing package mix, more opportunities there. I mentioned package. So when you put all that together, we do feel that 4-5 is sustainable. And especially in this second part of this period of 16 to 20, we see that on the upper end.
And then if I shift to margins, you've done an excellent job rebuilding margins in the past few years. You set back, when you said it, that Capital Markets Day in London, you set a margin target for 2020 of 11%. Your 2 years having delivered well against that. Are you confident you can achieve this target? 2 years, well, two and a half years to go. And what would you say are there risks in not? What are the main risks potentially in maybe not getting there?
So let me take this one, Andreas. We are confident that we can get to the 11% by 2020. We've had so far 3 years of good margin growth, on average 100 basis points of growth since 2015. And that has been the whole operating leverage story. So following the years of quite intense restructuring up to 2014, we have been able to accelerate growth of the top line, which on the lean fixed cost base, it has yielded quite significant margin expansion. And we will continue with that. Especially now in 2018 and going towards 2020, we are going to see a small deceleration in the pace of growth. Last year already, we had an exceptional growth of 120 basis points, but that was helped quite a lot by good news on the ruble following a couple of years of significant depreciation. And let me take the opportunity also to say, specifically for 18, that we expect the first half to be a bit slower in terms of the growth compared to the second half. And there are specific reasons for that. First of all, there has been significant marketing investments that we have been making in the first half. Related with the FIFA World Cup, related with the revenue growth management. And also, in the second half, we will cycle significant marketing investments that we made in the second half of 2017. So both these factors create a phasing advantage in the second half compared to the first half. And also, we will have certain price increases in countries like Nigeria and Russia in the second half. So that is going to boost further the margin growth in the second half. So we do expect a much faster expansion in the second half of 18 compared to the first half of 18. Having said that, to your question about potential risks, we just feel that as we spoke in the Capital Markets Day a couple of years ago about certain accelerators and decelerators in this journey. This is all that really could determine the exact timing of when we get to the 11%. So far, the input cost environment, the way we see it for 18 and to some extent for 19, is quite benign. We are, for this year, quite well hedged in terms of sugar and aluminium. So we have very good visibility and some good development in terms of input cost, very low single-digit growth for 18. So the only one that is potentially a wild card is FX. Last year we had good news because of the positive correction, I would call it, from the ruble. This year we return to more normal currency depreciation and impact on the P&L, but nothing that we don't handle through the top line development.
And if I can follow up on this, when you think about the potential for margin expansion even after 2020, I mean, without talking about targets or anything like that, but do you see, I mean, one of the main drivers of the margin has been operational leverage from the top line growth. So if you can continue to grow the top line at 4-5%, should this continue to deliver margin expansion?
So yeah, we absolutely believe that we can continue to grow margins beyond the 11% and beyond 2020. What will change is the fact that as we move towards 2019, 2020, and beyond, back to Zoran's point about the expansion of the portfolio, the new categories, the new channels that we will be entering into, and also generally the country mix, we see that directionally, we will accelerate the expansion of the absolute size of the business in terms of top line and bottom line. However, the pace of growth of our margin will slow down. So we will not see the expansion rates that we saw between 15 and 20. And already, as I mentioned earlier, slowdown in the pace of growth will start being evident from this year to 2020. So absolutely continue to expand from the 11%, but at a slower pace than 15-20.
So if we move to a topic that I'm sure a lot of people would want to know about, I'm sure you've had a lot of questions on CCBA in your various meetings. Now, of course, I don't think there's a lot you can say, but the markets think that you're interested in the asset. I'll just ask you conceptually how you think about the balance between growth that you'd get with more exposure to emerging markets and risks that this entails, considering that an important aspect, I think, of the investment case of Coca-Cola Hellenic up until now has been the good balance between developed and emerging markets that you have in your business.
Yeah. Well, as you very well said, two things. One, yes, this question comes up. And secondly, I cannot say much because simply we don't comment on any M&A things and such speculation. So I think that's understandable. Given the fact also, I would just reiterate, we are very open about the fact that we are actively looking anything that might be a good fit and bolt-on for us, primarily in terms of categories where we can find something interesting that fits our growth agenda. But also, in the Coca-Cola system, we are always open to discuss whenever there may be something coming up. But on that point, the fact that we also have a number of emerging markets in our territory, I can only say that that's a very, very important part of our growth. And learning how to deal and operate in the emerging market segment, and that's one of the critical drivers of growth for the future. So I would just say that our knowledge, capability, and expertise in dealing with such markets, it's very clear. But equally, we very much appreciate and value developing and established markets, which are also playing a critical role in the overall way of how we are driving and shaping the growth. So as I said earlier, we're very lucky with the territory coverage that we have today and the footprint. And I believe this can serve us extremely well for many, many years ahead of us.
And if I may, in part sort of connected to this, can I ask you what sort of and what level of, I mean, operational synergies do you have in your existing markets now? I mean, where I'm aiming is to understand whether hypothetically, in the context of a potential sort of CCBA deal, if you were to dispose some European assets, whether this would create some dyssynergies.
I mean, as Michalis mentioned, we went through lots of transformation through a number of years to make our organization leaner, faster, more agile. At the same time, the business we are in is very much a local business. So in every one of our countries, we have production facilities. And so each of our markets is kind of self-sustainable for the big majority of our volume because that's the nature of the business, and huge distances are never cost-effective. From that point of view, I believe we are well set from synergies and this point of view.
If I may ask about balance sheet, again, partly probably connected to what we've just talked about. Your net debt EBITDA at the end of 2017 had fallen to 0.8. Your balance sheet target is 1.5 to 2 times. Should large M&A opportunities not arise, is there any obvious reason why you wouldn't re-leverage your balance sheet up to your target?
That would definitely be the objective. As you know, we can't do buybacks in a large scale due to the free float threshold. So the only real option is a special dividend, which we have done in the past. On a number of occasions, but that would be the most quick and efficient way to get the leverage back to our targeted range.
I suggest now maybe we try to open it up to the floor if there are any questions. We have a question here at the front.
The Coca-Cola Company headquarters have gone through a lot of change. Can you comment at all on all the changes that have gone on there? And, you know, is it becoming a bit more reactive?
Yeah. As I mentioned on the first question, we do see that the speed, the openness, the speed of reaction to what matters on the ground with consumers, I can only say that we are very much encouraged and excited with the direction the Coca-Cola Company is taking, fully respecting sparkling as a still critical category, but evidently they have opened it up and they are opening. And as a result of that attitude and direction and faster risk-taking, I can say that concrete evidences of that are visible also what's happening this year. Because last year we only discussed a plant-based beverage opportunity, and we very quickly came to conclusion that we want to go there together. We invested in our facilities in Prague in the Czech Republic, and I would say 9 months later we are out there in 13 markets. I have to say this is much faster than it has been in the past. I do see that that's not one-time case. Smart Water was another example where we had very short conversation. The way we have discussed and agreed the way of introducing the fuse, like overnight introduction, was also a very productive, efficient conversation. With both sides, strong commitment, how we will do it. So to conclude, I personally can say also from my end, as someone who's been around for more than 20 years in the system, I do see that this opening up and total beverage portfolio that company is talking in very concrete and tangible terms is something that will make a very visible difference.
So maybe I'll ask, while we wait for questions, I'll ask another question about two of your key markets, Russia and Nigeria. They've been a bit more difficult past few quarters, past year, in part because of the macro, in part because of the competitive environment. I think there was a bit of a decline again in Q1, but you reiterated your expectation at Q1 that the markets should grow for the full year. So, A, what gives you this confidence? How are these markets progressing? And do you think these markets can grow even if the competitive environment remains intense? Have you got enough going on of your initiatives to drive growth?
Well, in short, absolutely yes. But, I mean, these two markets are precious, unbelievable growth engines of the future. And yes, both of them have faced their own macro, political, economical crises, which sometimes come and go. But one thing is for sure, that both of the markets are developing in the right direction, and they are becoming, you know, more stable, more developed. Population in the country is becoming more affluent. More and more, you know, people, like for example in Nigeria, from the poverty entering slowly middle class, which is opening immense opportunities. As a reminder, in Nigeria, every 2 years you have the growth of the population of the size of Switzerland. So, yes, in Q1 we had soft starts in both of them, but it was, especially in Nigeria, it was expected. As let me start with Nigeria, as we were cycling in Q1, two price increases, whereas now from April 1 we entered the period where we cycled all three price increases that we had in the last 18 months, and especially because in April 1 of last year was a quite sizable price increase that the competition didn't follow. So we stayed playing at the premium level. And that's a very conscious choice, because we clearly want to drive value and create value where both volume and price mix play a role. Secondly, we were cycling very high volume growth of the Q1 of last year. Also, we came on stream with a high-speed line, which is actually the fastest line in Nigeria and in whole Africa, which started end of March, which helped us a lot with PET capacity, and we already feel it. And also activating FIFA World Cup, which starts this week, as Nigeria has qualified, and Nigerians have two big passions, music and football. And we are activating that in Q2. And we have seen from the start of Q2 and throughout this quarter, that Nigeria, in line with our expectations, has returned to growth. Same with Russia. We did plan that our pack price, all OBVC changes, will start end of March. So that has happened and been rolled out. Secondly, we also completed full listing with all the key accounts of the Fuze tea, which in Q1 was not done. Then we also have fine-tuned also our promo activities in line with more than expected intensified competitive activities in Q1, still maintaining a good, healthy balance between volume and price, as it will never be just volume. Also key activities in Russia, starting because of the FIFA World Cup, now in Q2. We've been there in April, and I've been very pleased with what I saw in terms of the activation across all channels. And last but not least, we know that we are going to cycle a very bad summer last year that was in Russia. It was horrible summer. So if we just have a normal summer, we don't need anything, you know, above normal, so we are cycling something that will help us. So I'm pretty confident that both of those markets will continue and will, with the growth, and we'll have a good growth year this year.
So, yeah, sorry, yeah.
We see in Australia, wonderful country. We're seeing, you know, a movement to the young mums, you know, going away from sugar. And we had tried stevia; it didn't really get a lot of bite. What are you seeing across your developed markets versus, you know, obviously in Russia and Nigeria, people aren't really worried about calories. And you know, how's that battle going? And is there a niche product starting to come up in some of the developed markets? We're seeing it with a lot of little niche products coming from competitors. You know, how's that all playing out, and really does it matter in the whole steamroller of Coca-Cola going forward? Does it really matter that you're losing a little bit of sales to niches in developed markets? I'm not sure I'm totally on track, but there you go.
Yeah. We see in our established developed markets that in all of them, our, as we call them, zero light variants are having strong growth, double digit. And that's already at the back of a number of them having already high percent of zero light in the total mix. So we do see that it matters. That's why to bring excitement and novelty to that segment in the category, majority of flavor innovations that are happening on the zeros and lights. And we do see that it matters to consumers, whether that's lime, whether that's cherry, whether that's lemon. I mean, it can be anything. So we do respect that as closed as they can be, Austria and Switzerland, but you will see that flavor preferences and what one country likes, the other one likes something else. So we do that. And consciously, we innovate in that segment. And it's not surprising, for example, like in Italy, that now for a number of quarters, we are constantly having a strong double-digit growth on zero and light. So that works. Now, when it comes to these various niche players, I would stick even within sparkling category. That shows how much opportunity there is. That's why we are also tapping with new brands. I would like to highlight here example of the adult drinks, which are growing three times faster than the whole category. And with Schweppes that we have in several markets, we have now introduced Royal Bliss. I'm absolutely optimistic and hugely confident about what this segment means and how much value it brings from the market. Because as a reminder, you can have this as a straight drink, or more and more what happens is that you have this as a mixer and mixability after work, evening. Schweppes in all of our countries sells at premium. It's between 10 and 50% above Coke, and it's growing for a number of last quarters, strong double digit. Because consumers want it, recognize high quality product, and I have to say it's not only us, but the whole segment of the adult drinks is going very well. It's only that we are now accelerating, that we are playing with more brands there. It used to be only Schweppes and Kinley. Now it's Royal Bliss. So we are very much focused on this segment, which maybe 5 years ago we didn't take to that level, not even close. But now this is accelerating to a very high degree.
Can you talk a little bit about what proportion of your business, or maybe what proportion of your growth is coming from new products, and what the right level that should be, and maybe just compare and contrast across the developed markets and the developing markets as well?
So last year as well as this year, first of all, if you take the percent impact on our total volume, it would be between 4 and 5%. And this is without cannibalization and without cannibalization. But we do see that a need in developed, but in other markets as well, that innovation plays. So last year we had a big number of innovations, but this year we say we have probably more. I mean, not probably, certainly more than ever. Innovations coming into the market across all categories, because we do see that it is one engine of growth, second bringing the excitement and relevance that consumers want, and it also gives us the opportunity to bring in products which are, you know, more premium, give additional benefits to consumers that they appreciate. So the whole price mix opportunity is there as well. So, in short, I can really say that this is critical. And going forward, I would expect that our ability and capability to constantly come up with relevant innovations is only going to increase and not to be smaller. Thank you.
Mm.
maybe I'll ask, well, we've got a question there.
It's about CCBA. I know you can't really comment on any rumors or anything, but just can you tell us a bit more about the timing that you're fixing yourself? Or is there any official timing? Because, I mean, we've been talking about it for a very long time now, so what should trigger something in terms of the time frame of this? Thanks.
Thank you. In fairness, the ones who are absolutely best positioned to answer on this are colleagues from the Coca-Cola company. Initially, they have given certain timelines. You know well, as from what we have read and heard from their calls, is that they had also some regulatory things in South Africa. Elections were there and all sorts of things. So, I mean, everything that they said as a timeline, which I think they did say that eventually they see that by the end of the year or something like this, I would just say what we've heard, what anyone can hear from them. So I think really they are the ones to give the most accurate answer.
One last question.
Yourself as the only viable bidder for that business for Africa. Do you see yourself, is that an auction type process, or do you see yourselves as the only bidder?
I really cannot say anything more than what I said on the topic. I really wouldn't know. I really wouldn't know.
Okay, thanks.
All right, I think we've time is finished, so I'd like to thank you very much, Zoran and Michalis. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you.